It's The Takeaway. I'm Kai Wright, in for Tanzina, who's back in the host chair tomorrow. As vaccine eligibility continues expanding across the country, data from a number of states continues to indicate that Black and Latino people are not being vaccinated at the same rates as white people. That's despite the fact that these are the same communities that have been overrepresented in COVID-19 cases and deaths. Early on in the vaccine rollout, public health experts raised concerns that vaccine hesitancy among communities of color could be a major challenge. But recent polling from NPR found roughly the same degree of vaccine hesitancy among Black and white respondents. That same poll did find that Latino respondents were somewhat more likely to say they would not be getting the shot. So while access to vaccines remains a major problem for Black and Latino communities, the brighter side of this story is that vaccine hesitancy appears to be going down, and a fair amount of the credit should be given to local leaders. Many of them have taken it upon themselves to share information about the vaccine and help people in their communities schedule vaccination appointments. I have two guests with me now who have been playing this role in their communities. Pastor John Zayas is the leader of the Grace and Peace Community Church in Chicago. Pastor John, thanks for being here.
Hello, thank you for having me.
And S. Mitra Kalita is the publisher of Epicenter, a newsletter helping New Yorkers to get through the pandemic, and CEO of URL Media, a network of Black and Brown community news outlets. Mitra, great to have you back on the show.
Thanks, Kai. Great to be here.
So Mitra, your newsletter got its name, Epicenter, because you are in a part of Queens that was the epicenter of this crisis when it started last spring, which means that it was, you know, if it was an epicenter here in New York, it was one of the epicenters in the country. Remind us about the toll COVID-19 has taken on your community.
Sure. So we launched out of Jackson Heights, Corona, and Elmhurst, which are neighborhoods in Queens that just a year ago, if we were talking on the phone, you would hear ambulance sirens going off behind me. The physical was evident. And I would say that over the last year, terms like social distancing, a quarantine, sort of what the rest of the country might feel, or even like working from home, these are concepts that in my neighborhood are not really how the pandemic has played out. It's a very dense neighborhood, and same reasons that we love living here made it, you know, really a ripe place for COVID to spread.
Right. So we saw huge numbers of both cases and deaths there. Pastor John, how about in your congregation in Chicago? How has it been impacted by the virus?
It's been difficult because we have a major immigrant population, and so they're very hidden in homes and very isolated. And so the biggest impact that has happened in our community has been to try to communicate, to try to gather, to try to send the message out of the how tough this the virus has been. You know, sometimes in our community, especially in Chicago, folks go into silos, and it was just very difficult for us in the mm-hmm. beginning to really spread the word or even to try to help.
All right. Well, but then so when the vaccine rollout started, members of your congregation started coming to you with questions about it. What were they asking you?
The first thing were they asking if it was safe, or are we being used, or, you know, is this of God? You know, it's just so many questions that they had, you know, to trust. And so we had to walk through a process with them and say, listen, this is not an end time vaccine, so let's get that off the table. This is something that it's been worked on, and try to ease their fears, try to comfort them in a way that they would feel like, okay, if you as the leader trust it, and we know you, then, you know, are you going to get the vaccine? And so my wife and I, once the vaccine was available to us, we took it, and that began to create a bigger conversation where we were able to chip away little by little on folks' fears and mm-hmm. their lack of understanding of it. But they trust us. That was the key word.
Right, right. Mitra, what about in Queens early on in the vaccine rollout? What were some of the information gaps?
So I would agree with the pastor that as soon as somebody knows someone who they trust, who they love, who's very personal to them, who's gotten the vaccine, their attitude towards the vaccine completely changes. And so in early days, it was very similar. So in early January, we started to hear from just subscribers of our newsletter saying, how do we get this? I don't have the internet access. I don't have the skill set to toggle among multiple sites. So really, it was not as much vaccine hesitancy as much as it was, please help me get access to the vaccine. And I think that's a really important point, that we've framed this as mistrust and some hesitance, which is, I don't want to discount that, but I think the access issues are what people are mostly asking us for help navigating. And I would say that once we see a ripple effect, I mean, we have spreadsheets now, we've helped about 2,500 people get booked for their vaccines. And I see trend lines where, you know, one waitress at a sushi restaurant might get her vaccine through Epicenter. A few days later, I start to see three or four people from the same restaurant. And then a few days go by and I see more and more and more. And so I really feel like what we need to get out there, we've registered 2,500 people. My hope is that the impact of that is countless more people who know their friends, their neighbors, their churches, like, again, to the pastor's point, institutions that we trust, getting their vaccines and having a ripple effect, because that's it's the single most important thing that any company and any community can be working on right now. I really, really believe that.
I hate to use the analogy, but it's viral. It goes viral. It sounds like what you're describing, from person to person.
Also, and if anybody can help make that process easier, our word of mouth spread is so much greater than Twitter and Facebook, which I think is really important, that much of the government's rollout has been on the internet. And yet these are populations that are not on the internet. And so we really, by any means that we can make this feel real and accessible, right? That is exactly the way for this to go viral.
Mitra, on this question of access, we know that, as you've pointed out, that this community person-to-person approach is what works. Has the New York in New York, has what has the conversation been like between York at the community level and government officials?
Sure. So I think in some way, you know, we're a newsletter, I'm a journalist, right? So this is, I did not intend to get into vaccine distribution. I think that the greatest takeaway for me has been the vaccine rollout's failure has been one of communications. And so that's where we sort of inserted ourselves into helping our community. I do think the good news is that government officials are listening on two fronts. One, they are getting the message out that if you are eligible for the vaccine, get the vaccine. And we're at a stage where you want to look for eligibility, as opposed to some of the language we were hearing of, like, I'm just going to wait my turn. You know, I have high blood pressure, but there are people who might need to go before me. Like, I think that narrative, thankfully, is changing. If you qualify at all, just go get the vaccine. And politicians have changed their stance towards this, right? And it's been very much from a place of no vaccine shaming, just go get the vaccine. Right. The second is, over this past weekend, I saw great progress from politicians that have been supporting pop-up vaccine sites. The arrival of the J&J vaccine, which is a one-shot vaccine, which means workers don't have to take, you know, 2 days off, potentially more time, depending on their reaction to those doses. You know, J&J has been pretty revolutionary, and we see community leaders and government officials embracing, you know, pop-up sites for J&J. You're one and done, get you in and out. And we're definitely seeing that mostly skewed towards seniors and educators. My hope is that, you know, the next phase of this, maybe by this weekend and in days to come, starts to get essential workers and restaurant workers in, because that's the population that really seems hesitant to take 2 days off of work. This time off keeps coming up over and over as a stumbling block.
Pastor John, what about in Chicago? Have government officials been proactive about reaching out to you and helping in your work?
Yes, they have. I think Chicago has done a really good job. I would even say great in reaching out to local official with the local officials, but also like, you know, the mosque, the churches of faith and even community centers, and said and mentioned us where we have like these group talks, and they gather us together to kind of like look at sites that need more help or more vaccines. And then we kind of work together as a group and begin to identify those sites and then say, okay, we can use, say, 1,000 vaccines at this site or 750 vaccines at this site. So it kind of like bounces around in different areas. And with the zip codes in Chicago, we identify the hotspots and then we've been targeted. So I know that we are hosting a site in April. We're going to host for 750 vaccines at our site. So that because we have a lot of immigrant population, so they want to target that this next round. Mm-hmm. So they have done a really good job of communicating that. You know, we're part of the mayor's task force of kind of, you know, answering those questions, you know, boots on the ground kind of thing. We go to our community, find out what's going on, talk to our residents, how they're feeling, even those who have taken the vaccine, how they're doing, and then try to even find testimonies so that we can share with other residents and other folks, say, listen, they received the vaccine, they're doing well. Would you entertain the thought of doing the same? So it's kind of like, you know, walking them through a process, allowing them to feel comfortable, you know, feeling that, you know, this is safe. And so that's been our experience so far with all the folks that we've had gotten opportunity to vaccinate.
What about on the access questions? Mitra mentioned that sort of taking off work for double vaccine shots has been a big issue in her community. What are the access questions for you?
Yeah, for us it's been, because again, you know, for a lot of folks, so they've been doing a lot of Saturday vaccine distribution days. So they've tried to do days where people are likely to be off. And so we have kind of prepared folks in advance so that when we hear that there's a vaccine offered in some site, we'll say, listen, is there a possibility that you can take this day off? And if we have to even talk to their employer and let them know, listen, this will help here in this position, and they would allow that to happen. But I think that for the best of it, it's been, I would say, we've done a lot of weekends. So Saturdays and Sundays have been the target dates that the city has really focused on to give the vaccine, where there's more likely opportunity where people are taking the days off.
Neither of you are public health officials. This is not either of your job. And you've stepped up in this way. I wonder about that and how you're taking care of yourselves in the middle of this. Mitra, what about you? How have you taken yourself in the middle of this?
So that is the million-dollar question. You are getting me after a night where I decided to go to bed at 10 p.m. And, you know, the state sites have like a surge of appointments at 1 a.m. And so I did that knowing that I would not be on with the rest of the volunteers who've been working. But I just had to, because it's been days and days, weeks and weeks of this registration drive, and it certainly takes a toll, not just in terms of physical exhaustion, but you know, there are so many issues that have surfaced in the vaccine rollout, from documentation that that people paid under the table need, to people not having doctors, and so there are so many of the ills of decades of neglect that we're contending with now. And so it's easy to kind of take all that very personally and feel burdened by it. On the other hand, I really believe that how we are spending our time in the pandemic will define our country, our world, our communities after the pandemic. For me, not to give back to people who have been enabling the takeout that my family orders, or the hospital workers up the street, or, you know, the teachers who are working to figure out homeschooling, remote schooling, all the types of education that we're doing right now. I mean, this really feels necessary. And so that's kind of what keeps me going, is that we're just in this moment where if you can give back, you know, I hate to sound lofty, but what awaits us on the other side is very dependent on getting everybody vaccinated.
S. Mitra Kalita is the publisher of Epicenter and CEO of URL Media. Pastor John Zayas is the leader of the Grace and Peace Community Church in Chicago. Thanks so much to both of you for your work and for joining us.
Thanks, Kai. Great to be here.
Thank you for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.